So we have Canto 7, Chapter 5, Prahlad, the saintly son of Hiranyakashipu. This is verse number 53. Yata Sri Bhargava Guru Bir Atmane Upasiksitam Natsarumena Chach Chiksam Dvandvaramopavarnitam Yata, as Sri Bhargam, the three processes, religion, economic development, and sense gratification, Guvi, by the teachers, Atmane, unto himself, Prahlad Maharaj, Upashiksitam, instructed, na, not, sadhu, really good, mene, he considered, taksiksam, the education in that, dvandva arama, by persons taking pleasure in duality, in material enmity and friendship. Upavarnitam, which is prescribed. Translation. The teachers, Sunda and Amarka, instructed Prahlad Maharaj in the three kinds of material advancement called religion, economic development, and sense gratification. Prahlad, however, being situated above such instructions, did not like them, for such instructions are based on the duality of worldly affairs, which involve one in the materialist way of life, materialistic way of life, marked by birth, death, old age, and disease. The entire world is interested in the materialistic way of life. Indeed, practically 99.9% of the population in the three worlds are uninterested in liberation or spiritual education. Only the devotees of the Lord, headed by such great personalities as Prahlad Maharaj and Narada Muni, are interested in real education of spiritual life. One cannot understand the principle of religion while staying on the material platform. One cannot understand the principles of religion while staying on the material platform. That's something to meditate on. Okay. Therefore, one must follow these great personalities as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 6.3.20, Swayambhur Naradasam Bhukumara Kupila Mano Prahlado Janiko Vishmo Balir Vyaya Sikir Vayam. One must follow in the footsteps of such great personalities as Lord Brahma, Narada, Lord Shiva, Kapila, Manu, the Kumaras, Prahlad Maharaj, Bhishma, Janaka, Bali Maharaj, Sukadeva Goswami, and Yamaraj. Those interested in spiritual life should follow Prahlad Maharaj in rejecting the education of religion, economic development, and sense gratification. One should be interested in spiritual education. Therefore, the Krishna conscious movement is spreading all over the world, following in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj, who did not like any of the materialistic education he received from his teachers. He didn't like any of it. Being instructed here about the clear distinction between two types of education. Actually, there's only really one type of education. Sometimes we say materialistic education. But actually, as Prabhupada describes, material education is more like learning how to somehow or other keep the body and mind together, which is really not necessary for material education, because there are persons like, you know, great saints and sages who live in the forest, who can't even write their name, but they don't have any problems maintaining their body and mind. Sometimes we also define materialistic education as a coat of paint upon the surface. In other words, education comes from the Latin word educare, which means to bring out. And so the actual etymological meaning of the word education means to bring out something that is already within you. Material education is just teaching you, or not teaching you, but giving you information, that's all. It's more like getting information about the things of the body and things of this world. But education is actually something which is the feature of the soul, which is, what is that education? Is that the soul is completely aware of its position in relationship to everything, especially into the Supreme Soul, which is the source of its existence. So that's a vast level of education. But we don't have to learn that, because we already know it. Spiritual education is there within the heart and mind, in the heart of the living entity automatically. So the process of learning is the process of awakening or bringing out that education through the process of bhakti. But we learn things from their scriptures taught by great sages and saints, and by great acharyas and spiritual teachers, and by examples from other persons who have real realizations in their practice of spiritual life. So those forms of knowledge actually inspire us and help us to awaken our real knowledge of Krishna, which is there within the soul. So there's no need. Here, Prahlad Maharaj, he's only 5 years old. Where did he get his education from? He heard from his spiritual master, Narada Muni. So this is actually the principle of education. Therefore, the word Veda actually means knowledge. When Prabhupada was challenged in a question and answer session by people who wanted to know more, these are people who are academic initiates and scholars, they said they had did some research and the Vedas are only like 2,000 years old or 1,000 so many years old. And Prabhupada immediately went to this. He said, Veda means knowledge, and knowledge means eternal. So you can't trace out the beginning of knowledge. Therefore, the word Veda actually means the beginning of all the knowledge that is coming originally from the source of knowledge, Sri Krishna himself. So therefore, the word Veda really means knowledge. And well, how is that knowledge given? It's given by Shruti. So another name for the Vedas is the Shruti. That's another synonym for the word Veda, is to hear. And the word Upanishad means sit down near. So sit down near means to sit down near a person who has knowledge and learn from that person. So that's how knowledge was given, through the process of hearing from one who has that knowledge, or self-realized souls. And that makes up the essence of how knowledge is communicated. But knowledge itself is situated in the heart. Therefore, the principle of the soul is chit. Chit means full knowledge. So that's the only knowledge that's really required in order to, what we say, to achieve self-realization. And the materialistic knowledge, when we have Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, he couldn't even write his name. But who was his disciple? Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, who was one of the greatest scholars and proponents of, you know, spiritual knowledge. But his guru was illiterate in terms of, you know, he couldn't even write his name, as we hear from, you know, from the Shastras. But what was his qualification? He was self-realized. So sometimes devotees think we need a certain amount of materialistic knowledge. Just like I know there's one particular temple that when devotees join, if they're going to college or going to university, the leaders in the temple say, finish your university education. And then you come and join the ashram. And then once you join the ashram for the first year, you know, you can also do some of your employment. And that way you can pay back your parents, because it's, you know, they gave you all the money for the education. But the whole thing comes right down to when I asked the devotee, you know, what is the benefit of materialistic education? And he said one thing, it helps you become regulated. In other words, if you go to a system where you have to follow a certain regulation, that is very important in living a life, because regulation is the foundation for success in the execution of your goals of life. Srila Prabhupada was highly regulated in his activities. We know that he was so regulated that they could set the clock by his activities. And he followed that very strictly, understanding the principle of... But sometimes he had to adjust that due to preaching and traveling. But still, on a personal level, he maintained strong regulation. So the basis of, you know, like some kind of, what's the word, institutional education, it teaches you regulation. Just like if you go to the army or any kind of military service, they also teach you regulation. And you have to perform those activities in a regulated way. So that's good, because if you don't have that training with becoming regulated, then to systematically understand how bhakti works becomes very difficult. It becomes very difficult. And then what's the problem? The mind and the senses jump in anyway, at any time, and then give their own regulation. But regulation keeps you, allows you to control your mind and senses and move it in a certain direction, and in the desired direction, and that is Krishna consciousness. So basically, but what we learn in these institutions, which they call educational institution, is really how to exploit other people. It's really what it is. Because if you have the idea to be better than someone, so there's all competition in materialistic life, especially in educational institutions, to be better than somebody, to be in control of others. But in spiritual life, a devotee wants to be lesser than everyone, in the sense that they want to serve everyone. They don't think, oh, I have to be better than this person. They're not comparing themselves with this, between this person and that person. This idea of comparing is a big, big thing in materialistic life. People like to compare themselves to people who are lower, and then they feel better, and compare themselves with people that are higher, then they feel envious, you know. This is how material life goes on. So that's what material education does. It puts you in a certain social and economic position where you're always comparing and either feeling falsely happy or always envious, you know. And then you struggle to somehow or other maintain your position and further that position. And so this is that knowledge you get. So, unless, you know, Prahlad Maharaj was asked, you know, what did you learn in school? You know, he just basically explained that what I learned, and I didn't learn anything in school. I learned from my real teacher, you know, who has complete knowledge. There's a discussion in London with one mother of one devotee of Prabhupada who joined in London. And she's nice. She likes the fact that her son is now a devotee. And she's talking to Prabhupada. You have to hear this lecture and discussion. She's very prim and proper, and she speaks so nicely. But one thing she can't get through her head, why is Prabhupada not allowing kids to finish their education? She says, you are so intelligent, and you were educated, but now, you know, my son, it's nice, he's a devotee, I can see he has so many, you know, good behavior now, but he's going to be stupid. He's not going to go to school. And Prabhupada's coming from one side, coming from another, trying to somehow convince her that this materialistic education is not required to achieve happiness in life. You can be happy without it. In fact, you can only be happy without it. And she can't get it. It's a long distance. She can't get it through the whole talk. I can't see why my son doesn't go to school. You're not allowing them to finish, you know. She's practically, you know, begging Prabhupada to be different. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he gives the whole thing. He says the educational systems are slaughterhouses. They destroy the good qualities of the living beings. If you learn a technical skill, I mean, that's something you may be able to use. But the stuff you learn in terms of the knowledge they teach you, you know, it's practically, it's extraneous to anything in life, you know. And it's just useless knowledge. And again, how many people are in China? Who cares, you know? So, you know, well, you know, George Washington, you know, he died of syphilis, you know, so he's considered him maybe some, you know. So you learn about, you know, the lives of degraded people. So, you know, it's you know, it's one thing after another. So, and you can see, they just did a recent survey, and of course they're doing this survey regularly, how do students value and view their life in colleges. And I was shown a statistic, and 9 out of the 10 of them all had negative attitudes towards school. They didn't like it. They did it because, you know, they felt it was like, okay, there's some value to it. I can get a job, maybe. So we see one thing after another. A lot of times you go to school, you get an education, when you come out, nobody wants to hire you anyway because whatever you know is useless. So even from the material point of view, there's nothing, when we say substantial in material education. It's just, it's a waste of time. It's a waste of time. Because, you know, one who actually has knowledge, Prabhupada tells the story of the boatman and the scholar. You've heard that story?
No.
Not about that. Okay. I'm glad you're honest. So this is an interesting little antidote, which kind of gives us a little understanding. So one scholar, and he has many, 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 you know, what do we say, educational carriers. He's well-versed in so many fields of knowledge. So he goes to India, and he's in India, and he comes to the banks of a river, and he wants to cross. So he realizes he needs a boat, so that he calls the boatman, and the boatman comes. You know, just a simple guy wearing his little, you know, gumsha. Probably has holes in it. He moves his boat over, and the scholar gets in and wants to go across. So while they're crossing, the scholar's looking at this, you know, boatman. He's thinking, this person doesn't know much. So he decides to get into a little conversation. So he says, you know, Mr. Boatman, you know, you're a boatman here. Do you know the science of oceanography? The displacement of water, you know. So he said, what is that word? He said, I don't know anything. I just roll my boat, that's all. And the scholar said, well, you know, 50% of your life is wasted. That was his reaction. So then after a while, he's still crossing, and he says, you know, here you are, sometimes you're at night, and you see the sky, and you see all these stars. You know the science of astronomy? He said, what is that? You know, how stars and the constellations, and he describes the cosmos, all the thing. And the boatman says, I don't know, I just row my boat. So after some time, and there seems to be a storm brewing, so the storm comes and it's raining, and then all of a sudden the waves of the ocean start, you know, become turbulent. And the boat is rocking this way and that way. And it's really becoming a life and death experience. So finally, the scholar, he's afraid for his life. So the boatman says to him, Mr. Scholar, do you know how to swim? He says, no. He said, 100% of your life is wasted. So, yeah. These are, you know, little antidotes to help us understand that materialistic knowledge, it just makes you arrogant and proud, you know. But spiritual knowledge, the basis of spiritual knowledge is really humility, because spiritual knowledge doesn't come by way of reading books or learning verses. Spiritual knowledge comes by way of the mercy of Krishna through his representative, the pure devotee. And when the pure devotee is pleased by the effort of the devotee to execute Krishna consciousness, then yasya prasado bhagavat prasado, then the path to devotional service is wide open. And one receives automatically what we say features of transcendental knowledge, sometimes in a realized way and sometimes in a theoretical way. But in any case, one receives knowledge by the mercy of the spiritual master. So real knowledge, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, is trinadapi sunichena tayoreva sahishnuna mamanina mamanadena kirtiniyasana. When one is actually cultivating the qualities of a Vaishnava, then knowledge becomes, what we say, understood easily. So it's a matter of developing spiritual qualities in relationship to the practice of devotional service. And of course, we learn different things in the scriptures, and we can consider that. But that's theoretical. It only becomes realized when we execute devotional service in a way that pleases the spiritual master and the Lord. Then that knowledge becomes what is called jnana and vigyan. And Prabhupada explains the difference. Vishishtagan, gyan, Vishishtagan means that knowledge which is intensification of theory comes to the point of what we say realization. And I'll give you a little formula for those who like to read and study. Because reading and study goes through five stages. When you reach the fifth stage, you actually benefit from your reading and study. The first is you read, and the second is you try to understand. And then through understanding, you apply application. In other words, you take that knowledge and apply it in the day-to-day life as you perform devotional service. Practical application of knowledge brings vigyan, realization. And what is realization? Brings qualities and devotion. One develops skills, one develops qualities, one develops character, good character, and devotion. These are the results of knowledge. So knowledge goes through different stages like that. Transcendental knowledge, that is. Like that. But material knowledge, what is it? You get some diploma. You don't even remember half the stuff they taught you. And then you look for a job, you go to the door, you knock on the door and say, Mr. Employer, I'm your dog. You wag his tail. Do you have any place for me to sit and bark? And if he doesn't, then he says, go away, dog. And then you go to the next master, a potential master. So you're like a beggar going from door. This is why it says a Brahmin will never accept employment in the material world. He'd rather beg or not even starve than to accept materialistic employment just to maintain himself. I know one devotee. Now, you guys are going to be shocked with this, and I'm going to be criticized for this thing. Anyway, I'll say it. I know one spiritual master. He doesn't give brahminical initiation to anybody who has an outside job. I mean, that's a little extreme, but this is why. Because he says Brahmins should not work. Brahman should not work for materialistic people. And that's actually Shastra. But of course, because we haven't developed, you know, Vanashram yet, still devotees are going outside in order to maintain themselves, sending their kids to karmi school so they can be destroyed. Like in some countries, I don't know here, but I think because of the former communist regime here, that people are required to send their children to schools, right? It's a law. But in countries like America and others, you can do homeschooling, where you can keep your children... Huh? Here? You can do it here? Ah, you're homeschooled. That's why they're sitting in class listening to Bhagavad. If they weren't homeschooling, they'd be out, you know, playing frisbee somewhere else.
This is their school.
Yeah. So that is actually a way to educate. And then, of course, when one gets to the level for higher education, they can also accept that. Of course, we don't recommend it, but it's being done. But that's the whole thing, that because of our society hasn't really come to the point of really developing Divine Ashram as Prabhupada wanted it, we're still looking outside for both employment and for education of our children. And that's a big problem, not a small problem, it's a big problem. But Prahlad Maharaj, he's 5 years old. Of course, he's a self-realized soul at five, and he doesn't want anything to do with that knowledge that is not related to the process of devotional service. Okay, so thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Modern education, spiritual education. Everybody's looking towards everybody else to ask a question.
Mm-hmm. Are they doing some exercise?
Huh?
They're doing stretching.
Stretching? Mm-hmm. I exercise, huh? Any comments? Ananta?
Hare Krishna. You mentioned that Brahmana was not employed for materialists, but we can see even in this story here, Shananda and Amarka, they were employed in Hiranyakashipu's school.
They were different kind of Brahmas. They were not Vaishnava Brahmanas. Well, yeah, even a non-Vaishnava Brahman who is actually cultured and education of Brahminical teachings, usually, because it says in the seventh canto, and later on you'll see, that if there's nothing to eat, they'll even go to the fields and look for grains in order to pick it up and then cook some grains. They won't take any work like that. That's a real brahmana. That's a real brahmana. But we don't have that nowadays. Because they just won't take employment from anything in this. They work only under the guidance of religious principles and not economic principles. Yeah, but these are sons of Sukaracharya, and Sukaracharya was a seminal guru. He was a paid brahmana. He was getting a lot of his support from Bali Maharaj. And that's how he was being maintained. That's why he was disturbed when Vamanadeva came in. And Bali was going to, you know, give Vamanadeva, who Sukaracharya could understand, was going to take everything away. So he was worried about, you know, his share. He wasn't going to get his share anymore. So he was paid. He was a paid brahmana.
So there are different levels of brahmanas.
Well, I guess they say. I mean, they give him credit for being a brahmana here, but make him Brahma Bandhu. Huh? Yeah.
Maybe also one comment on modern education. Mm-hmm. I went through the slaughterhouse. I mean, I was educational system up to the highest level, I mean, after the PhD. And majority of things I don't use, of course. And but one thing which I learned, which I also found that is useful, is methodologies which I learned there.
Yeah.
You know, how to study, I studied there. Yeah. So I'm studying Shastra through that kind of skills.
That's what I was saying, yeah. How to become regulated in even in organizing your life and learning. That's a form of regulation.
Yeah. And there are many skills which are there taught, also for them in the leadership, or which are very useful. For example, team building skills, which is very useful even amongst the devotees.
No, we need team building because we don't have people who want to follow anybody, so we have to create a team. So it's just big. So I mean, Prabhupada gave the formula for organization, but it doesn't work because nobody wants to follow the leader. So we have to have a team. It's like we run the temple by a board of directors instead of a temple president in a lot of places around. And that wasn't Prabhupada's program. He had temple vice president, you know, temple commander, financial, what do you call it, accountant, all these things. Simple.
Also a board.
Governing board commission. Yeah. Well, that's a managerial situation also, yeah. But when Gaur Govinda Maharaj came on the board, he wanted everybody to listen to him. And nobody wanted to follow that. Because he understood, you know, according to spiritual position, everyone should follow. But, you know, that's why things are so complicated. Instead of following people who are self-realized, we follow people who are good at managing skills. And that's one of the problems. Well, you need both, you know, like that. But as it says, Prabhupada says, when you know Krishna, you know everything. For those who are self-realized or pure devotees who are advanced in Krishna consciousness, they know how to manage, but they don't do it. That's not their service. That's not. Yes.
Well, we have the example of Shivananda Sen and Vasudev Dutt was not very good at handling his finances. So Lord Chaitanya told Shivananda Sen to look after him, otherwise he's so generous, he's giving away all his money, and he can't support his family.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's not necessarily that one has some spiritual knowledge or realization.
We don't need a board of directors to tell somebody to help organize somebody's personal affairs. That's the point. I mean, anybody can give advice. It was advice that Lord Chaitanya gave. Yeah. Well, what was his advice? That, you know, he's a great soul, but he can't function on the material level, so somebody can do it for him.
Yeah, the other thing is that our Krishna consciousness movement is not material, it's a spiritual movement.
Right.
So even managing in our movement is not material management, it's a spiritual management.
Exactly. So spiritual management, as opposed to material management, it's not about getting the job done. It's about elevating the people that are working under you at the same time getting the job done. Well, you have to, yeah. In material management means what? If somebody's not up to the standard in material society, they can. You can give them a chance to improve, and if they don't, they just replace them. But we don't replace devotees because we value each and every person. So to manage in material, spiritual society, all means help to manage that person's spiritual life, along with managing the day-to-day functions of the temple and the village. That's why it's so difficult for spiritual management. You have to consider the person too, and his benefit. That's why Prabhupada said we need this Vanashram Dharma. And he writes in the first canto, the spiritual master should be able to observe his followers and see how best that he can engage them in Krishna consciousness. In other words, see their nature and then organize that where they can become productive and happy in their execution of devotional service. But that was one of the problems in our society, is that it wasn't so much about the devotee, it was about the system. And we just used devotees. We still do that. Well, you not got nothing to do, all right, we need you over here. I remember when I was working with new people in one temple that I was staying at, we had one person who was the guy who fixed everything. So, you know, I was working with these new people trying to educate them, and he would come up to them and ask them, hey, I need you to help me carry this, you know, or do this, or do that, or do this, you know. And it would make it difficult for me to really bring these people along in the proper way, because he would just be trying to pull people away to help him with his day-to-day, you know, services. And they weren't getting what they could have got in the right way, as opposed to, you know. Once in a while I would let them go, but then a lot of times, you know, they were just being, in other words, they weren't being used in the way that they could actually advance in Krishna consciousness. So that's one of the problems that we face, just giving people service, not knowing how to engage them. We put the service before the person. But we see now, when you put this person before the services get done eventually. It's more about the devotee and not about the service. But because if you take care of the devotees will take care of the service. That's the most important thing. So that's a system of observation, evaluation, understanding, and engaging people accordingly. And that's still, we have a ways to go with that. Question? Yeah. What do you like to do? What is your favorite service? Yeah. What do you resonate most with in Krishna consciousness? What service would you like to do?
I like to clean.
You like to clean?
Yes.
That's one of the most important services for temple life. Is cleaning, really. So here you go. Well, who's the manager here? You? Yeah. So there, you can do cleaning for Krishna. And Prabhupada said, when you clean the temple, you clean your heart, because the heart is also synonymous with the temple. So yeah. So we need you to do some cleaning. Would you like some service?
You need some cleaning?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. There you go.
I mean, I know you have quite high standards of cleanliness. So I'm not sure I can.
Well,
I'm up to the.
You do your best. It's not like we criticize you because you're not up to the standard. If you're trying to serve and you're trying to clean, you can also learn to clean. Prabhupada taught us how to clean. I'm teaching Bhakti Vatsala how to wash the floor. He was giving me sticks with a piece of cloth on the end and pushing the dirt from one side of the room to the other. And he was calling that mopping the floor. And then I taught him how Prabhupada did it. Prabhupada taught us, you get a bucket, rag with water in it, and you dip the rag in it, you wash one area, you squeeze out the rag, you squeeze it as dry as you can, then you dry that area, and then you go on to the next area. And when you're done, the floor is completely clean and dry. That's Prabhupada. Prabhupada taught us that. He's been doing it. You like it now? Yeah, he likes it because it actually works. I see people with these mops here. Like, there goes the dirt one way, and it's going that way. And there it goes that way. We got a little bit on the cloth. 10%, 20 sometimes. But yeah, so there is a way to clean. And if you feel inspired in your service, you think, oh, how can I do my service better? I love to clean. In fact, you know, I actually spend a lot of time cleaning and organizing. I just love to do that because it's just my nature. You know, I like to clean and organize and like to make things, you know. But I can't always have, I could do that all day and find satisfaction in that, but that's not my service. I have to do other services. So, like that. So if you feel inspired and you have some time, please come forward and do some cleaning. And it's really a wonderful service. As Prabhupada said, the person who's distributing books outside and the person cleaning the temple, from Krishna's point of view, they're equal. That's what he said.
Well, I do both, but in cleaning, I'm more successful.
There is more effect from my cleaning than from distributing books. I mean, I distribute, but I'm not much of a money collector.
Well, that's all right. Some people just don't have that acumen. You know, whatever you are feeling inspired to do, you can do it for Krishna. It's needed. Okay, you had a question?
Yes. sorry. I mean, we haven't been probably, because you were mentioning this dialogue with this lady who insisted on her son getting education.
Yeah.
I mean, Srila Prabhupada got education, his father was pure devotee, so, and we have a young intelligent man here who spent all his life in ISKCON and thought that it's necessary to get a material education, so we should maybe ask him why he did it.
Well, if you're going to work in the world, that's another thing, if you're a grihastha. But Prabhupada, he was a Gandhian when he was going to college, so when it came to accepting his diploma, he didn't show up, along with many of his peers. They rejected their diploma as a protest, although he went to school. I mean, it was fashionable. I mean, we all know, as you grow up, once you enter into Krishna consciousness, then you understand, well, I have at my disposal that education that will bring me complete satisfaction and happiness and the goal of life. So why don't I put my attention and energy in that? That's practical reasoning. But before, if you're going to school before, finish your education, then come and join the ashram. Generally, we don't tell people to quit if they're going, but we tell them to finish, and then once they graduate, they may have their diploma. Maybe they can use their education later on in life for some material gain, but that's only for those who are actually entering into grihastha life. If you're not married, what's the use of going to school? Or not planning to get married? Does that help a little? Well, tell me what about material education that you think is so important.
No, I mean, I was more into some speculation before, but speculation is necessary only until you find what is, until you accept some goal of life, then you should do something about it, probably. No? Yeah. This philosophical speculation, it's in fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita also. That
but you don't need material education to speculate. Yeah. That's for sure. I mean, there's people in the villages in around the world who know the goal of life, but they don't even know how to write their name. Prabhupada said in the Western countries, people don't even know about, you know, that this life is the only life. They think this life is the only life. For a common villager, he knows. I have to act properly because in my next life, you know, I'll either get rewarded or punished. So they know that there's a difference between the soul and the body. That's the beginning of education, just to know that. So people go to materialistic institutions to learn education, but they don't even know who they are. They still think they're this body. So they haven't even begun to get real education. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, you know, materialistic education makes an ass kind of an individual. He can speak, he can bray, you know, the ass is braying loudly. Something like that. I remember there was one devotee in Slovenia, we used to go to his place in the mountains, Slako, or something his name was. And he had this donkey there. Poor donkey. It was all alone. I forget, he gave him a name, but I forgot his name. What was the name of the donkey again?
Ass.
Ass. Bhakta Ass.
Herman.
Herman was his name? It was a Slovenian name, wasn't it?
German.
Poor name, donkey.
Herman is German name.
Herman
was
name. Hey, man. I mean, donkeys are, I mean, they're living entities too, so we shouldn't criticize anybody's material body. But amongst the animals, they're not really highly placed, even in the animal society. So we had two donkeys in New Vrindavan, just across the road from the temple, and we had a big field. And one was a female, one was a male. So one devotee decided to learn a little bit about donkeyology, and, you know, how donkeys do things. I was watching, and this is a fact, you know, the male donkey, he sees the female donkey, gets all excited. So he's going for, you know, getting some action. So he's on his way. So when he gets close, she doesn't like the idea, so she kicks him with her hind legs right in the face. And he just moves back a little bit and he shakes it off, comes up again, thinks, man, try again, you know. You know, maybe she just didn't get it right the first time. So he goes again and she whacks him again, even harder. He falls back again. So after going through this for a while, then she finally acquiesces and gives in. He doesn't give up, you know. He's a little battered, but he's still determined. So sometimes we connect this to materialistic, what we say, so-called civilized life. People get kicked by the material energy, and they just keep coming back to get the same kick. Maybe if I go it around this way, the kick will be not as hard as the previous time. But you can guarantee, as soon as you try to enjoy this material world, you're going to get a kick. Some form or other, there's going to be some kick. It's going to come. It's just the nature of the material energy. So we can learn a little bit from donkeys about what not to do. And Krishna has somehow or other put what we say knowledge, that is what we say practical knowledge, all through life. And you, just by observing in a, what we say, objective way, and having a little bit of understanding, you can start to see how nature is teaching us so many things that is practical and helping us also to move forward towards spiritual life. Yeah, nature is a great teacher. Yeah. So, yeah. Okay, so we'll stop here. Okay. Should I end with a nice song? I have a nice song. Should I end? Would you like to hear a nice song? Okay, this is all about school. Okay, ready? This is a rock and roll song back in the 60s. Okay. No more books and studies, and I can stay out late with my buddies. I can do the things that I want to do, because all my exams are through. I can root for the Yankees from the bleachers, and I don't have to worry about teachers. I'm so glad that school is out. I can sing and shout. You like that? It's a nice mantra.
Squeeze out.
Huh?
Squeeze out.
School is out. You remember that song? He knows all the rock and roll songs. He was telling me about the other ones. So, yeah, I learned that when I was a kid. I haven't forgot it yet, because it used to be one of my mantras. So, yeah, I never liked school. I think the highest grade I ever got in school was a C-. One time they accidentally gave me a B, then they realized they made a mistake. My report card had a lot of red marks on it, because they used to, if you got an F, failure, they'd put that one in red so you'd see it, you know. And so my average grade was D+. Well, that's it. That means dunce plus. I never liked school. I hated it. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.